Okay, I'd like to call to order the meeting of the Legislation Committee.
Hi, John.
We were supposed to start at 12:30, but because the Budget Committee had many, many items on its agenda and robust debate on them, we are starting a little late. But we do have a quorum. We have legislators Myers, Rogowski, Burton, Harkin, and Testa. So we can proceed. And Williams, that's right, you're on this committee. Thank you. Williams out for you. So the Legislation Committee is well represented. The first item on the agenda is a home rule request to allow electronic real property tax exemptions, which was added late last week. And I read this quickly. I take it allows the a receiver of taxes to make receipts for real payment of real property taxes available electronically.
Right.
This seems like a no-brainer.
It is in the law that you must provide receipts. Most tax receivers ignore that because you've got a printing and a postage issue.
Right.
It winds up costing you 75 or 80 cents. So they do it just on demand. That creates trouble. So if it could be done electronically, it just makes their lives easier. And I take your phrase, no-brainer, to be exactly the way to describe it.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else want to add to Legislative
Burton? I would second his motion.
Okay, that's a motion is seconded.
Second a no-brainer.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The next item is renewal of a contract with the Westchester County Historical Society. And we received from the administration from George Oros a message requesting immediate consideration to designate the Westchester County Historical Society as county historian. So you should have a memo to that effect and a proposed legislation.
I will make a motion that we approve this.
Second?
Just one question.
I have a question of why this had to be put on immediately.
Because there's a gap.
It's
been expired since January 1st.
And I think it was just brought to their
attention. So we're in the horrendous situation of not having a historian.
So we have no history. We have no history.
Well, we'll reconstruct.
I knew I emptied this.
We'll have to reenact the whole
thing. Mr. Chairman,
we could rewrite it.
It says there's no fiscal impact. I'm just curious.
There is a fiscal impact.
I would think that they carry out some activity. Just what? How they by fees? I mean, how do they?
I thought the county.
I thought there was money in the budget the past year.
For the historical society, I don't think so.
No.
I don't see anything on the fiscal impact.
I thought there was money in the budget.
That's my question. Is
well, I think it's there. The question of who fills it is fiscally irrelevant, but it's in the budget.
I wonder if they had reasons.
But why is it saying it says no fiscal impact projected?
Yeah.
That's what the
they've got a $10,000 line item in the budget. They just didn't fill the job at that point. You're still going to pay them $10,000. Doesn't matter who it is.
Oh, so you're saying there's no additional fiscal impact?
It's already budgeted.
Yeah.
Right. Gotcha.
The designation itself is no impact. Just us passing.
Right. It's just we've got to approve them.
I want to make this contingent on them funding the Miller House restoration.
Power play.
That sounds like a Jenkins move. Really, this morning.
Remember, this Bradley was on. Is there another is someone else on the bill?
Yes, it's the new guy.
He took it.
Castelli.
Oh, then we got to be off.
So Bradley's name on the memo.
No, it says Castelli on the bill.
Do you still want Aaron?
He read.
No. Well, it'd be interesting to know what we pay them if she's around. But I think the memo points out that they do provide various services, collection and preservation of documentation, artifacts, and properties.
Electronic.
Yeah, they are terrific people. They really have done a terrific job. Besides which, they're co-located. Right? They're co-located in the same building?
With the county records.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, you can't ask for a better deal.
And it allows Mel Hoffman to keep writing.
Yes.
Okay. I had none of that.
They have a reason.
So, any other discussion?
Oh, yeah.
I moved this, right?
I'm
sorry.
Yeah. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
None? Okay. Who's here from your committee? Because we're going to.
Mr. Testa and Mr. Burton.
So you probably are.
Yeah, we're rolling.
So we're going to take a brief recess till 1 o'clock. which is 2 minutes from now. We're waiting the arrival of Dr. Neuberger, who is a expert in the area of tanning and the effects of tanning
we've seen
on public
her
health.
Amy Neuberger, yes. Right. She came when we first passed. This was your legislation.
Yeah.
And the first discussion is going to be...
she took a beating for some of it.
I know.
It's good legislation.
What's in the budget for the county historian? Do we pay them a certain amount to perform services? Or
there should be...
is that all right?
Yes, we do. And there is something in the budget. And I believe this contract was the... it'll be on A&C this week.
Right, we just passed it.
It's for less than what was budgeted. So, yes, this is budgeted.
Yep. Okay, Chip. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Chip, anyone?
Did you take a vote yet?
Yeah, yes, I think we did.
John, I had a motion and a second, but then I
At ANC, it was on $89,000.
That sounds right.
Right.
That sounds about right.
That much? Well.
Good. Did you take a vote?
You did?
I think so.
I wasn't in.
Passed unanimously.
We had a receiving file. Minutes.
So, John, I know they...
Okay, sorry.
They pushed you late. We've got environment at 3, and then Bill's got his committee at 4.
That's why we started this early.
Yeah.
So, we'll have 2 hours to discuss the 3 laws we're going to discuss. But we have minutes to approve... for legislation of April 5th and 12th, and I think we have 4 of us here, so we can probably vote on this, right?
I would move both minutes.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye. Aye.
No?
There are 2 items to receive and file.
We don't vote on those, though, do we?
You do you vote to receive and file.
Okay. Do I have a motion to receive and file a memorandum from the Business Council of Westchester regarding item pricing, which is moot now since we passed it?
Move the file. Move the receive and file.
Okay. Is there a second?
So yes.
Yeah, I'll second if you need
all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
There's none. The second one is a something that we have discussed, but I'm not sure it's going to where it's going after the huge outpouring of sentiment against this proposal by tax receivers and assessors, forwarding this Tom and legislators Abinanti and Pinto forwarding a proposed local law with respect to the penalties for the neglect to pay school taxes.
Could we receive in circular file?
Yeah.
Well, since
I'll accept that motion.
Well,
sorry
to say until. I mean, I'm not sure. Does Tom support this? I mean, I don't know if he's. Unless you feel the committee's had sufficient discussion where to go with it. I know we had a lively discussion. But are we? But is that? I mean,
the only item that was left open was the which Tom I think wanted to pursue is making it optional. But the other receivers thought that would then put pressure on
raises,
them.
Right, it raises problems, but I think to be fair to Tom, he's on this committee?
He's on the committee. If he wants to come back with a proposal that makes it optional, he can come back and we'll discuss it.
The thing that really killed this was what had been explained to me when I first took over legislation was that we have to err super much in the direction of not doing things that affect the charter, whatever the value of them may be. And since this really didn't have much legs in the first place, I just think it's just something that ought to disappear.
Okay. So, do we vote on this? All in favor of receiving and filing this proposal?
Aye.
Yeah, it's just the tax penalties. And then we have a number of appointments we have to approve to get on the calendar for tonight, right?
Yep.
And they're listed there. I'll let Legislator Burton, chair of the Appointments Committee, just go through them.
We can't find his agenda, so.
Okay,
where are we?
3 appointments. I'm sorry, 2 appointments to the Electrical Licensing Board.
It depends.
Anthony DeCroce is
the interview. Well, I can't even find her. But anyway, they
you want mine?
Everyone. Where's the agenda?
Can be
No, I don't. I don't think I have it.
What's wrong? Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. There, it looks like in a minute. Excuse me. Yes, the appointment, Mr. LaCroce, for the electrical board, Ronald Shapiro, for the women's advisory board, Steve Eklund, for the electrical licensing board, Jay Pinoz, for the plumbing examiners, and the reappointments of Tom Newman and John Peters for the Fish and Wildlife boards. All of them came through, and it's a standard that's been set very high by the administration for quality appointments, and this has continued. So I think we unanimously approved everybody with enthusiasm.
Second. Anybody have anything to say about any of these people?
They all look great. Call the question.
The question's called.
I would just like to say for the record that Tom Newman and John Peters are constituents and great individuals. One was a former county police officer. The other was a career Army officer. And they've served honorably already on that board, and it's just a re-up.
The record is so noted. Now we'll note for the record that Anthony LaCroce is my constituent and also a county employee who's responsible for doing all of the capital project estimates. Mm-hmm. So all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None? Okay.
And we'll be doing those this evening, right?
Yes. I believe that's why we wanted to get this done by 1 o'clock. Right.
It's
close enough.
12:59 right now, by my watch.
Done by 1 o'clock for electrical.
I have 12:59, about the rest of you.
Okay, we'll wait for, we need the Community Services Committee to arrive.
Oh, yeah. Tom, I got you over here today.
There's Stacy can't stay away till now.
You guys started?
No. We got rid of the obvious. Oh, cool. You brought herbal cigarettes. Great. Tom bought his personal collection of herbal cigarettes.
Surprising. Thank you, Jim.
Wasn't frisked and had them confiscated out there.
No, they were actually legal. They're just not not legal to be sold to minors.
And can't be consumed in this building.
That's right. It's a non-smoking building.
Right. Non-smoking county, is it, interiorly? Nope. Or is it only restaurants you've been in?
All workplaces.
Yeah. Okay,
indoor and outdoor.
Well, I think that's also state law now, too.
Right. Yes,
WARS is stronger than the state law, though.
That's what we're going to discuss with that. I'm not sure it is.
No, the workplace law is stronger than the state.
Is it?
Yeah, because we have no smoking outdoors in a workplace.
Oh, no smoking.
Right. There's always
I can't.
The fun part of being a legislator here was always having your own little twist to the legislation, which makes it a little, you know, that was my twist. I wrote the whole thing, but the one we passed. And our laws.
You always say our laws are stronger than the state's?
Yeah.
Is that why you did it?
No, we passed ours first.
Oh, first.
We passed ours first. And actually, the way ours came about was we had a meeting down in Long Island. We decided we'd get several counties together. And each county had their own little twist to it. It was basically the same law.
Same law with them.
But Long Island, that's where we got it. It was regionally. And Bloomberg took the lead. And once Bloomberg's on the radio doing this, it made it much easier for the rest of it. So we met with the health commissioner from New York City and several legislators from Nassau and Suffolk. For example, the Nassau and Suffolk guys didn't want to ban outdoors because they got all these restaurants in one water. And they said, we don't want to do that. And then they did something that we didn't do. I don't remember what it was. But I'm looking at this, and I'm saying, just from fairness, and the argument that I made to the guys, I said, you're on Mamaroneck Avenue, and you've got this much front space. And this guy's got no front space. So it's unfair to allow him to use his outdoor as a smoking area, where he's blowing smoke and people going in and out of your restaurant. And you don't have the advantage of having an outdoor place where you can smoke. So it's got to be fair to everybody. And so the restaurant always went along with that. In fact, Pete was the guy who led against the Pete Saloon. I forget Pete's last name. That's in Elmsford. And he,
isn't that Pete?
What he's done is he's got an outdoor area where there's no service. He's got a bunch of tables, like three or four tables in the back outside, and there's no service.
So you can take some drink out there.
Take your drink out there and smoke.
See, this is from the hall.
If you want to serve yourself, that's legal.
Makes it hard in February.
Okay. It does. You want to open your meeting?
It does.
Because I open my meeting.
Oh, okay. The Committee on Community Services is opened. We have present Legislator Tester, Legislator Burton, and Legislator Myers, and myself, Alfred Williams.
Okay, we're going to. This is a first meeting that we're going to be discussing some of the work that the PACE law interns have been doing. We began a project several months ago to start examining county laws to determine whether any changes need to be made, either because of the way they were drafted, no disrespect meant to any current legislators that may have drafted them, whether they've been preempted by state law, whether they've been superseded by events or other factors. And we also will get into the enforcement, how these laws are enforced and whether they're being enforced effectively to determine, you know, their value to the county and the taxpayers of this county. So we're going to start today with discussing four local laws. The first one, five, I think, today. The main one we're going to discuss is our tanning law, because of proposed legislation in the state and the situation with respect to state law and regulating tanning salons. We're also fortunate to have Dr. Amy Neuberger, who will be arriving shortly.
She testified on the law.
Who is an expert in the area of the effects of tanning on public health. We're also going to be discussing our local law on alcoholic beverages that require warning signs, and then we're going to be discussing a law that deals with the sale of gasoline on odd and even days. A law particularly
was that left over from the embargo?
It was left over from the 70s.
Yeah.
We will also discuss the gasoline price sign law and a law that Legislator Abinanti drafted, the sale of herbal cigarettes to minors. The two law students of our four interns we have today are Brendan Bannigan and Bryn Fuller, and I'll ask them both to come and have a seat up here, because they're going to have an opportunity to tell us all about the work they did. And I want to thank our committee counsel, Betsy DeSoy, who worked very closely with them and helped organize this project. And we'll be hearing more about other laws in the coming weeks. So I think we can start. We'll probably interrupt. I know Brendan is going to go first to talk about the tanning salon law. If Dr. Neuberger arrives, we'll see, you know, what her schedule is. Hopefully you can finish before we go on. So let me ask this is Brendan Bannigan, who will be graduating from PACE next month, right, in May, third year student. And he will give us a presentation of the analysis that he did that Betsy and I have reviewed with respect to the county tanning law and as it compares to the state law.
Okay. I just want to say thank you for letting me come to the guide and do this presentation. Special thanks to Betsy for helping us out and preparing everything for us. I guess I just want to start off. Westchester passed Local Law 702 in 2005, and it was really towards curbing or restricting minors tanning, especially between the ages between 14 and 18. As the law stands now in Westchester, anyone 18 to 16 needs parental consent to tan. Then a year later, in 2006, the state passed Section 3555 of the Public Health Law, and basically they said they're restricting tanning between 14 and 18 with parental consent. Consent forms and the warning signs are essentially the same in both laws. What Westchester would like to do is raise the minimum age to 18, but they're kind of stuck with what the state law says, because the state law, Section 5 of 3355 says that any law that was on the books at the time that the state law was passed is okay if it's stricter, but no law can be made after it. So Westchester, I guess, is at it, finding ways to see if they can modify the restriction or basically have more knowledge into the people that are actually operating the equipment. Nassau County actually has a similar tanning provision, where 16 and 18 you need parental consent, but included in their local law is that all operators of the equipment have sufficient knowledge of the equipment and the workings. It's been a problem with a lot of people that work at these tanning salons. They're not really, they don't know how to operate the equipment. They don't know how to recommend who's actually, you know, what, you know, when, you know, when you go in there, you're supposed to get a certain level of radiation or tanning, and depending on your skin type, you're going to get burned if you don't put the proper dial. People at NASA, I was thinking that, you know, if you have people that are trained and know how to work the equipment, less people will be burned. And that's just, you know, one idea that I thought Westchester could do. And there's another way that, right now there's a bill in the Assembly, New York State Assembly, I think it's Assembly Weisenberg, that's it? Weisenberg. That is, bill is 9110, and they're trying to raise the minimum age to 18 years. I guess those are just the two paths that we have that, you know, we can approach at this point.
So just to recap, since our law was passed before the state law, we can require parental consent from the ages of 16 to 18.
Yes.
So we could be stricter, but we couldn't raise our requirement to basically no parental consent. You have to be at least 18.
No.
We couldn't do that now because the state law preempts future laws. The state allows parents to consent down to the age of 14 for their kids.
Requires so parents of consent.
Requires consent.
What happens if someone's 14?
We don't allow, under our law, you cannot, even with parental consent, a child under the age of 16 cannot go to a tanning salon.
And there was a reason.
Under the age of 16, the state would allow a parent to consent to that, to consent to a child as young as 14 getting consent.
I say some interesting questions here, whether it's permission or prohibition.
It's permission.
No. This, I see three categories.
Yes.
One is who is authorized to use a tanning bed.
Right.
Number two, at what ages do you need permission? And, and number three, where is there a prohibition?
Right.
I mean, so can a nine-year-old walk in and use a tanning bed?
No.
Why? Because some law says that you have to be a minimum age of?
Yes.
In Westchester, you have to be 16, and you need parental consent.
State's going to do 14.
Outside Westchester, depending on the county, the state law is 14 with parental consent.
So below those ages, either the state law, below the age of 14,
so everywhere else in the world,
you cannot, a person younger than that age cannot use a tanning salon, even with parental consent.
Okay.
And then there's a window before the age of 18.
So there's an actual prohibition that says nobody less than 14 can use a tanning bed, and we say nobody less than 16. Does the state authorize people between the ages of 14 and 16 to use the bed?
Yes.
Now, with parental consent.
I'll give you an example. Our law 702 says, no owner, operator, or employee of a tanning facility shall permit the use of an ultraviolet radiation device by a person under the age of 16. Then that's subdivision A. Subdivision B says, no owner, operator, or employee of a tanning facility shall permit the use of an ultraviolet radiation device by a person under the age of 16, over the age of 16, and under the age of 18, unless such person provides the tanning facility with written permission. In a form
under 16 prohibited, between 16 and 18, you need permission.
Right, over 18.
Now, what is the language of the state law? I think the language is crucial here.
Well, the language is, I think, relatively similar.
We have age difference. It's 14. The prohibition is under 14.
Well, no, that
Section 3555, which Brendan cited, says no owner, operator, or employee of a tanning facility shall permit the use of an ultraviolet radiation device by a person 14 to 18 years of age, until such person provides the tanning facility with written consent.
Okay, so we still can control because of that language.
No, we can't do anything now.
As far as
subsequent
the
state,
our law is still good.
Our law that prohibits someone.
Is there a preemption clause in here?
Yes. No. Yeah. He just read the preemption.
And the preemption clause.
Maybe you weren't here for that.
No, I was here. No, I just didn't hear him read it.
No, there's
we're
a
allowed
preemption
to be
clause in the.
We're allowed to be stricter, so our law is okay. But if we wanted to now add standards of testing, of competency.
No, if you wanted to make 18.
No, further restrictions.
Further restrictions. We can't go. We're stricter based
on what does the preemption clause say? Is that in here?
I have it right here.
You just read it. Brendan will read it.
Can you read it again?
It's,
is it in the notes?
Section 355, Section 5. This section shall be exclusive and shall preempt any contrary local law or ordinance except that this section shall not preempt or supersede local laws or ordinances posing additional stricter restrictions on the use and operation of ultraviolet radiation devices at tanning facilities, which are in effect prior to the effective date of this section.
See? So our age, our laser.
Well, no, but the first language says any contrary law. What does that mean?
Well, this is what it means. If our law says 16 and their law says 18,
No, John. No, I'm willing to bet that with that, well, my will. I think a reasonable interpretation would mean if we authorize the use of tanning beds in contradiction of that prohibition. But if we made it stricter even today, I don't see why that's contrary.
Well, it's effect prior to the effective date of the state law.
That I understand. So we're okay with our existing law.
Right. We're stricter on the age because we went into effect first. But
no,
now,
I got that.
That's right, but if we want to do something now. We're
right. I think you'd still be able to do something now, but we don't have to get into that issue at this point.
The real issue.
The question is, do we want to continue to control between 14 and 16? And our statute is still valid.
Yes, but there's more to it than that. The tanning salons, we regulate them now by age, right? The real issue here is, do we need to go further? Because of the dangers that, as Brendan pointed out, the concerns about who's operating this equipment. I had an email and an exchange last year with a constituent who was suffered third-degree burns at a tanning facility because the operator didn't know what she was doing. And put him on too high a dose of radiation. And I think Brendan, Nassau County has some provisions that attempt to deal with
this. Yeah, it's under the operating regulations.
Mr. Chairman, if I can?
Hold on, legislator.
Yeah, I can. I think before, I mean, you're raising issues, how far, but before we get to that point,
you want to
there are
the age restrictions?
Well, there are existing conflicts, which I think the memo, I mean, it was laid out questions. The state law went into effect in 2009. There were state regulations that go to certain requirements. And the question I saw in this memo, the first issue is, who enforces? We have our inspectors going out, prior to the state law, looking at how they're enforcing the age and the permission slips and that. The state has now imposed additional requirements on the equipment and on the competency. Question I think he's raising is the county's made a decision to have the state inspectors inspect that portion of state law. But they don't look at the age because their age is different. So there's a conflict of who's inspecting what and who's doing what. And I think that's what Brendan wants us to address.
Betsy, we have Mr. Guido here.
I know the health commissioner or assistant commissioner is going to be here. But I'll speak to...
Assistant commissioner Guido is here. Come on up.
So, John, if I thought that was an issue that we...
That is an issue. You're right. Do you want to...
And then we can get to other stuff.
Guido.
But that's an existing potential problem.
We're now going to have Commissioner Guido address...
Who's doing what?
Address what our health department is doing with respect to either enforcing the state law or the county law, and both.
Okay. The new state code, which just rolled out this year, the state has offered the counties the option of enforcing it, or if we do not, they will enforce it. So we looked at the fees that were allowed to be charged, and those are kind of locked in public health law, so we can't raise those fees. And it would come out to something in the order of $7,000 a year only. Revenue program, so that would not come close to covering our costs. So we allowed the state.
And what would we be required to do? What enforcement would be required under the state regulations?
So we would require all tanning salons to be under permit, which they're not now. So they have to file and have a permit to operate. And then we would do a physical inspection of the facility, where we would look at their operating records. We would look at actually all of the tanning beds. Look at the timers, the devices, and we calculated the time required for that with re-inspections of $7,000 would not cover our costs.
Question. So now who is doing that? Now that we're not doing it, who's doing it?
The state is responsible.
The state health department?
Yes.
And are they doing it? Do you know what?
Not at this time. I don't know what their plan is, but they are responsible.
And those regulations are currently in effect? They've taken effect?
Yes.
Questions for Commissioner Guido.
Two questions. First, ordinarily, I thought to a large extent the county has taken on the delegation of responsibilities of the state health department. generally. I mean, I didn't know there were a lot of state health inspectors. Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, if we're not, if there are state health inspectors around to do this, so I thought we didn't delegate. Yeah, I thought that's the one issue. But the
problem.
But the conflict. I guess the question is, are inspectors supposedly or in charge to enforce our law would look to see that they have signs up, right? I forget if it says we have to look at the, you know, have to look at anything else. At least that there's signs up, and make sure underage kids aren't in there.
Right.
Now, do you do that? I mean, if you do that, you're saying you go to the chain of salons.
No. Are you enforcing our law?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the next question.
In a very economical manner.
Right. So do you do it on complaint, or do you do it? You hit every salon in the county at least once a year.
We have a state grant to enforce tobacco restrictions, sales of tobacco. So we use those same staff when we're going out and attempting to buy tobacco at stores, to also occasionally going to a tanning salon and try to get a tan. Hmm. So we do that about once a year. We challenge the 55, 57 tanning salons to see if they comply with our local law.
All right, so it's my chemistry. So you're in a position to see if the signs are up. And to see what to do. So, okay, you're there. So now you're saying, but the state law would require additional work, checking the equipment and maybe checking, I mean, just doing more work,
yes,
in this line. And you're saying to take the extra time and yeah, maybe competency to understand the equipment yourself. It's that extra staff work is beyond what you feel you can do for the 7,000.
Yes, it would take probably 2 or 3 hours per inspection, whereas right now it is just, you know, we do it so that where there are tobacco vendors, and on that same street, if there's a tanning salon, they go right in there, they're in and out in 15 minutes. Either the operator will allow them to get a tan without challenging, looking for age, or they won't.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't challenge them, then we give them something.
Excuse me, you mentioned 57. Is that how many tanning salons?
Approximately. We don't register them.
So yeah, they don't register the license, so how do you know, other than the sign,
Right, we did about it, and again, that's why I say approximately, because it was 2 years ago. We did a survey, and we looked through the Yellow Pages and on the Internet, and that's the number we came up with.
Well, the state requires a permit?
They just started this year, so they have not issued permits yet. But
so that'll help you, because then you'll know where the places are.
Yes.
And if you find one that doesn't have a permit, then you can turn them into the state.
Yes.
How many, I don't know if they're prosecuted, but how many summonses or citations or whatever have you issued for the lack of a parental consent?
I think it was 6 or 7.
Over what period of time?
Over the last, since the law went into effect.
So how much money is that?
3 years. 3 years plus.
How much money would you say?
$250 is a typical civil penalty we issue.
And so, and the cost of enforcing it is nil because you're using the grant money on the tobacco.
Right.
So you found some people some underage people who like to tan and like to smoke, and you use them for both.
So the question is, I assume it's illegal. I mean, there's nothing wrong. Are people going through whatever mechanisms and enforce our section of law? The question is, now that the state has requirements for permitting, requirements for doing other things, well, we're basically saying if we follow the existing operations, we would just simply ignore those other things because we delegate that back to the state. You said the state, you have to come in and enforce other parts.
There's another issue.
Yeah.
There's another issue. The issue is who gets the fines. Right. If you enforce the state law, where's the fine going? Where's it enforced?
Comes to us.
We enforce other state laws. So if we enforced it, if we issued a summons for it, we would get the civil penalty. And the state has already told us that they will refer complaints to us if they're not going to be able to respond to them timely enough.
So this is not like motor vehicle, where the police officer enforces the state speed limit, the state gets the fine. If he enforces the local speed limit, the municipality gets the fine.
No,
so this is a different scheme.
Right. So who issues the summons? Who issues the summons gets the fine.
So, but can you today enforce the state law?
Yes.
You're just not in the program to get paid to enforce the state law.
Correct.
Correct. So again, Mr. Chairman,
okay.
So if we make a conscious decision, you know, for budgetary reasons, you know, not to take on this this program, we are potentially, plus knowing the fact, as a practical matter, the state is not going to do it. Now, that may be a leap, but if as a practical matter, our understanding is, it really won't be enforced by the state, or not very often. We are making a decision to just have parts of this law which may be important to have enforced, not get enforced. I mean, if that makes sense, we're just gonna duck certain things, but the problem is backfilling. If we think it's important to enforce and we choose to enforce it, we're spending money that we haven't budgeted and we're doing the state's job. Again, it's almost like another, call it a mandate. State passes law, we think this is important, this should be going on, but if we enforce it, we'll see you once every 5 years or something. Is that sort of being, I don't want to be too unfair to the state, but it's,
do we have the ability to charge a fee higher than what is set by the state for the registration of tanning salons?
I wouldn't think so, because probably it's under not. State law. The registration fee is under state law. And they register with the state, right? They don't register with us.
Well, if we opted for it, they would register with us. Uh-huh. We're referring to the state, so they'll register with them.
Interesting. But we would get the fees. Well, we would get the fees if they registered with us?
If they registered with us, yes. It's $30 every 2 years. So I said the fee is set, I think it was set in 1990 when the law was first passed.
And there's a minimum inspection that has to be done? I mean, you can't just go in with a lesser inspection?
Mr. Chair, I'll turn to the litigators here. This memo, I think, has done a good job. It points out that if, can the county continue to just enforce the provisions of our law that are stricter, and then to do so, must the county assume full enforced responsibility of both county and state law. Suppose we ignore a state says, machine is not working, we don't check for the machine, someone goes in and gets burned, does the county get sued because our people were in there, looked around, didn't cover all, and then someone gets hurt? Are we subject to liability? I'll turn to our
I would think not, lawyer, but I don't know what see what the county attorney said.
Not, but it's an interesting question. An interesting question.
The machine was broken, we didn't check to see.
But it's not a violation of our law.
But it's violation.
That's why they don't want to take on the state.
Violation of the state law, and we said, well, we're just not assuming we're not enforcing the state law. But our person was in there and didn't do it. But if I don't know, I mean, it's
now the Nassau. If you look at this, a Nassau law that actually regulates what the operator can do.
But apparently we can't do that.
But that's the state. The state doesn't regulate. Am I right, Brendan? The state doesn't regulate certain aspects of tanning salons that Nassau law regulates, but
no,
Nassau predated the state.
Nassau passed it before the state passed regulation subpart 72, which they basically did more in terms of regulation in terms of equipment, lockout mechanisms, having a time interval labeled on the actual equipment, but not in terms of people actually operating the equipment.
But the state law doesn't require the operators to be licensed, right?
No.
Is that right?
Nassau is the only county I found in New York that actually has something that actually mandates the operators have knowledge of the actual equipment.
The state law really, and I'm addressing this to both Commissioner and to Brendan, the state law really regulates the equipment, not so much, and requires the operator to maintain certain records about the equipment. Regarding the equipment, but doesn't actually regulate the licensing or the training that an operator needs.
There's not a licensing requirement there, but at least in the earlier version, I'm not sure if it continued, that they require the operators to have knowledge and use the FDA's recommendation on hand.
Is that in there? I don't see
I don't
that.
Know that.
Maybe
that's still in there or not.
I remember reading, I didn't see anything.
Yeah.
I mean, most of the stuff was just basically the individual records that they require the actual tanning facilities to carry or keep, and then there's like the equipment rentals or the equipment requirements, and I mean that's the timing intervals exceeded by the manufacturer's recommendation, the maximum exposure level, but all those are set by the actual manufacturer and the FDA, I believe.
I think Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I know Dr. Neubarger isn't here yet, but one of the things that has really changed since this legislature has looked at the tanning facilities legislation originally is the state of the science. At this point, what is known about early exposure to these tanning beds. And they've now, whereas I think Dr. Neubarger before came, and it was anecdotal, it was seeing people come through her office in their early 30s with melanoma. And in fact, now there have been studies that actually substantiate that individuals have like 2.5 times more likely to develop
squamous cell carcinoma, which accounts for 23% of all cancer deaths. Individuals who use tanning beds, you know, and then in terms of melanoma, if use of radiation from tanning beds before the age of 35 can increase one's risk of developing melanoma by 75%. So.
Yes. Mr. Yeah. Chairman, I know
Dr. Neuberger, welcome. Thank you. Please take a seat at the table.
If I can address what Fetchin said. Yeah, I think, you know, if we just go back in time a little bit, and as the legislator who was the chairman of the Legislation Committee at the time and introduced this, I clearly recall at our first hearing on this law, a legislator sitting to the right of me very quickly said, what are we doing with this? Why is it? Have you had any complaints? You know, when he sort of startled me a little bit, and I had to think for a second. I said, you know, in fact, no, I haven't had any complaints. And I started, you know, really thinking, well, like, why are we doing this? And I said, well, wait, but the issue at hand is not consumer complaints today. It's the health complaint 20 years from now. And so we got some feedback. We, you know, it was not, I forget what the ultimate vote was. I think it wasn't unanimous. There was some discussion to that point. Is it a problem? Why are we doing this? There's no complaints out there. But it was the larger health complaints down the road we were anticipating. And so, frankly, with the information we had at the time, it may have been a little more anecdotal. I had done some research. We heard from some doctors. It clearly, as Betsy's pointing out, a doctor will point out, those assumptions that we made, they unfortunately turned out to be true. The evidence is now showing that, in fact, our law at the time was one of the most strict laws in the country. I mean, it was the age 14 was beginning to evolve. Different states were doing things. We were one of the first counties maybe in the country, and we raised it. So the evidence may be clearer now. That doesn't, by itself, that doesn't necessarily mean we change it. We're just saying, well, geez, we were maybe on the right track. What might be on the table, if what I see, is what the state, some legislators in the state have now raised to 18. The idea is 16 to 17, you bring in parents, maybe given the evidence, some legislators might think.
14.
Well, no, the current state law goes back to 40. We went beyond that. But now there's legislation pending to now take out that 16 and 17-year-old possibility, exempt it of 18. We can't do that yet. That state law hasn't passed. And given the existing state law, we obviously can't go stricter, so we would have to, if we decided as a group that we thought, you know what, we didn't quite get there at 60, we really should raise it to 18, I gather we can't do that at this point until the state were to add. We could support that state law. But I think we had the foresight to at least go to 16. We've been proven to be right, I guess you would say. But so it comes. So that is what it is. But the enforcement of, I think, the state, what the existing state law has, of Dr. Guido, of where should we develop a policy? Should we support? Right. The administration has decided, you know, to kick that back to the state. Our people go out for certain aspects of it. We may need to have a policy discussion. Do we want to take on some of those state requirements at a cost, apparently?
Right.
So that's.
Well, I think that's the issue.
The issue is.
The protection of minors is one issue that we dealt with in a different way than the state did.
Right.
We can keep that age of 16 mandate, even though the state law allows it to go to 14. The state law may change, which will make it even stricter than our law, and that'll be fine. So the question is, do we need, is there anything more needed to protect people, not necessarily minors, but the population generally who uses tanning salons? Does the state go even far enough? Because, Doctor, I was mentioning I had a constituent who emailed me that third-degree burns because the operator wasn't familiar enough with the equipment or didn't know how to operate it properly, and this poor individual suffered terrible burns. And I'd spoken to the then Commissioner of Health and said, you know, we just regulate the age, and the state regulates some other things, but nobody really goes so far as to license or require any training on the part of the operator. So let's just take a moment to hear from Dr. Amy Neuberger, who was nice enough to take time from probably a very busy schedule to join us. She's the founder of the Dermatology Consultants of Westchester, and I think appeared before this committee when it first drafted this law, prepared this law. So maybe you can give us some idea of the science and what you think of the appropriate regulation would be, even if we can't enact it here, we can at least send a message up to the state legislature that they ought to think about doing some more in this area.
Thank you very much for inviting me to this discussion. As you probably know, there was recently an FDA advisory panel which was devoted to the reclassification of these devices. As I said in 5 years ago in this room, the fact is that there are only FDA guidelines, there are no laws, there are no regulations that will deal with how these legally marketed devices are being used. All FDA can do, and we had some representatives from the International Tanning Association at that time, they said FDA rules are enough, and I tried to stress there are no FDA rules. All that FDA can do is regulate what goes on the market, and there's a little loophole in the law in that any device that was legally marketed prior to the act that brought about the development of the Center for Devices and Radiologic Health, that's where I have worked as a special government employee for 11 years, so actually this is an area I'm very familiar with. But anything that was legally marketed before the late 70s can continue to be marketed as such until it is found to be unsafe. Now, unfortunately, with the recent panel discussion, which was discussing reclassification of these devices, which are Class 1 now, and that means that they have about as much regulation as scrutiny as do Band-Aids or tongue depressors.
It's depressing.
Is they were thinking to reclassify it into a device which is more closely examined and to put in special considerations and qualifications for their use. However, the issue of enforcing compliance with this, they can't do anything about. Again, that's up to the locality. And this becomes financially overwhelming for any locality. I mean, really. The panel, and I was, by the way, I just want to say, I was recused from the panel because of my activities here. They said, well, since you were involved with this, this might show the appearance of bias. And I said, you know, I've worked for you for 11 years. You know I'm not biased. You know I always, you know, look at...
If you were a manufacturer of the machine, you wouldn't be biased.
There's no financial...
There's a problem down there.
It really is a public health issue. And they said, well, we're concerned about that. There were four dermatologists on the panel, and I felt that what could be done would be done. So most members of the panel, the dermatologists, wanted to basically have these devices made as inaccessible as possible for the young population. It seems that the populations that are at exquisite risk are those young individuals. I've brought a CD-ROM of all the scientific articles that were used at the FDA for your perusal. And there's some pretty good science here, I have to say. From the molecular basis of the carcinogenicity to the pretty good epidemiologic studies looking at the rise of skin cancers in people under the age of 30, closely correlating with their tanning bed exposure prior to age 18, okay? So this is just epidemiologic. Please understand, we cannot do this controlled trial experiment.
You're not going to subject people to radiation and find out if they get cancer.
Yeah, and also, you know, it would take, you know, 12 plus years to see the results. At that point, many, many more people would be
exposed.
So the data are becoming clearer and clearer with case control studies. The studies are also being done now rather than just with animals, are being done with localized areas of skin in humans, and then immediately excising to look at where those genetic mutations are occurring in control of the chromosomes which are responsible for activating cells which detect malignancies. So that's all fine and good. If I was there, at the panel meeting, I would have pushed for a moratorium on the sale and use of these devices altogether, just as was done with silicone breast implants. There were a lot of signs that silicone breast implants were associated with other diseases, and it took 5+ years of doing studies before FDA felt that there was less risk than they had put, and they were put back on the market. I personally would love to see a moratorium, but that's not what happened. A lot of people aren't familiar with how FDA works, so it has to be an all or nothing. I can give you the summary of what the recommendations were of the panel looking for special controls, asking to have registries kept in every tanning salon, the names and skin types of all the people. You know that's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. So I think that the best bet is simply to make it unavailable to those under the age of 18. I don't think it'll be possible to ban them completely in this state. And candidly, this is a time of financial issues in most states, in particular in New York, and this certainly cuts down on tax revenues. The fact that the federal government is now putting in a 10% excise tax on tanning sessions tells you they're trying to profit from this.
Who's doing it?
Sort of like that's the
government. Part of the health care bill.
The health care bill.
On the health care bill.
Yeah.
It's there.
Wow.
That's
so,
healthcare?
Well, it is.
It's a syntax.
Yeah.
No, no.
So,
it's a syntax.
Right. That's my feeling, but I have certainly ample data, and I don't know if you want me to discuss in any more detail. Mm-hmm. I'm happy to, but that's the result.
No, that helps. That's helpful.
That helps a lot. Hi, I'm glad to meet you. I just wanted to ask, in lieu of any regulations on or moratorium on the sale of the devices themselves, is there any increased regulations for the training of operators?
No. There's nothing like that on the books that I know of. That was on the wish list of FDA, but they have no ability to enforce.
And have you looked at the state regulations?
I looked at what was sent.
Yeah, I mean, they seem to regulate the equipment and the and other aspects of the tanning process, like the protection for the eyes. But it does require that a record be maintained. I'm looking at 72-1.11, operator responsibilities. The operator shall maintain a record of each patron's tanning visits, recording the date, the duration, and the ultraviolet radiation device used. And the operator must report certain injuries and illnesses. I don't know if that's going to accomplish anything. I don't know if you had a chance to consider whether those have any value. But at least there seems to be, and whether it's enforced is another issue. But there seems to be an effort to get some kind of data together. Whether it's useful or not, I don't know.
May I ask, have you ever had an operator reporting an adverse event to the State Department of Health?
We don't know, yeah. These regulations just went into effect, so the question is, prospectively, will they have any benefit? And sure, I mean,
if there's a consequence.
Yeah, why are they going to report it?
Right.
Our Assistant Commissioner of Health is here, Mr. Guido, who's sitting next to you. We are leaving the state enforcement of its regulations up to the state because they're not, fortunately, paying us enough to do it. But we may revisit that issue someday. But the question is, what resources does the state really have to enforce their own regulations? And do you know, Commissioner? I mean, do they have sufficient people to do this?
Probably not.
Yeah.
But it's your responsibility, so they'll have to do something.
Right. Any legislators, any questions for anybody? For
seems like the only thing that we can do is, as was recommended, is pass a resolution urging the state to be tougher.
To raise it to 18.
Right.
Legislator Rogowski.
There was one aspect.
Who was the author of the original legislation?
Yeah,
you may remember
him. Good to see you again. one aspect that sort of always troubled me, and I'm just—it's almost a legal question in terms of the marketing. When it comes to these unlimited sessions for the month for $10, whatever the price. You pay price, it's unlimited sessions, and
you can burn yourself to a crisp.
Well, yeah, and so we had testimony in the past that no more than once a week or whatever. There's a whole, scientifically, what's the appropriate? But you see the advertising, literally, unlimited for the month at a set price. How would that square legally with the state law if we wanted to look at somewhere where it's aimed at everybody or just under 18 to kind of get rid of that marketing scheme? Or would that, you think that would put us in conflict with the state laws go to the records and this and that, but if we wanted to delve into that marketing side, do you think we could?
It's a good question, because clearly we're prohibited from adopting a different age group until the state does. But and the state's regulations, deal with certain things. Is there room for us to? And I don't know the answer.
It's okay.
Is there room for us to regulate different areas of tanning salon practice? And number two, I guess the question for the commissioner: how would we do that?
Can I ask the thought? There should be a reason for record keeping in any kind of government work. So, from a scientific point of view, if one went every day or every other day, I assume that's more dangerous if you went once a week.
Absolutely, and the data is.
So, when someone advertises unlimited, at least without setting their own internal standards, you can come unlimited, but it's actually every 4 days. It's like, do you know how people react? What goes on in unlimited visits per month? How many do people actually do?
Part of the interesting science that's been looked at in the last decade is that some of the pathways have been worked out for stimulation of melanocyte-stimulating hormone release. And it turns out that actually also increases the production of beta-endorphin, which is the chemical that produces runner's high. And so with certain individuals, it turns out that there actually is an addictive state where people will tan many, many times, as many times as they can. They've done some sham studies, and this is real. They've measured serum beta endorphin levels as well. So it's more than just having a socially more attractive tan. It actually promotes this other state. And that makes it very difficult for people to give up tanning. We have in our practice a few tanning addicts, and basically, and when you give these people something like Narcan, which is used to block, narcotic type overdose, they go into withdrawal symptoms, very agitated and jittery. It's a very similar mechanism. So it's not a good thing. But if you limit it to one time a week, there's nothing to prevent that kid from going to the other salon down the block. Uh-huh. Right. And so Monday will be tanfastic, and Tuesday will be bronze salon, and Wednesday, so we really wouldn't have a control over that. But there is a threshold with total of 20 tanning sessions per season seems to be a threshold, and they extrapolated out what the amount of ultraviolet A that the person has received compared to natural ultraviolet A exposure, and it's something 12 to 25 times what you would have being outside.
It's much more than that, because part of the some of the discussion we had back then 5 years ago, and it pops up every once in a while, you can't ban the sun. People go outside, they're in the sun, so what do you, how crazy are you trying to, you're banning tanning salons, whatever, but, so what are you doing? But you're saying the evidence is, in fact, these tanning salons are much stronger than, so it's not quite the same as just walking outside. Well, it's a marketing gimmick, because I guess for pricing, pay a price, you get unlimited. And I'm just wondering if we could maybe look in that area. Would that be preempted by the state? One might look at amending our law to specifically prevent the advertising or the implementing of an unlimited amount of tanning visits per month for a certain price. I don't know if it's legal or not.
It's a First Amendment issue.
It's
maybe
goes
a First Amendment issue.
Well, it goes to the
Can
business.
Can we ban the use of a machine by a kid under the age?
Well, that's what we did.
No. We banned the operator from allowing it. Can you make it illegal for a child to do something?
Well, we banned the use of it by under 16. So we have
in other words, the person you would charge with the violation is the child or the parents, and not the
rule.
Why is it? Well, that goes. You charge the underage, the kid who's smoking at age 15.
Right.
I mean, we had that discussion. Are you criminalizing the user or the person who sells the cigarettes?
I'm trying to find some way to. I'm not necessarily wanting to go out and make criminals out of people who use tanning salons. But on the other hand, the whole point of going from a different place every day of the week, how do you get to that? How do you educate that this is a bad idea?
The day, education, maybe we can beef up the education in our law, just kind of require...
Well, there's sign requirements, but I don't know if people pay attention to them.
But it shouldn't be a difficult subject, but people who aren't educated on the issue kind of sort of make fun of it. But we educate mercury in the food. I mean, if you look at our various laws and things, we've gone from maybe trying to regulate it. We put signs and posters and brochures. Maybe this is an area where beyond the sign in the tanning salon, maybe we need to look
at
what
are we doing.
Have
any outreach
to
the schools?
Yeah, maybe we should
anybody?
Beef up the education. Maybe that's something we can do. Just because it seems the evidence now is even... It's as serious or more serious than we might have thought. It's really a very
Doc. You know, is there any organizations that are in the business of warning people of the dangers of tanning salons?
Besides the American Academy of Dermatology.
Yeah, besides doctors. Besides the doctors.
And May is Melanoma Month.
Yeah.
We do free skin cancer screenings.
Getting into the schools might be,
I've spoken in our local schools on many occasions, but. That's dependent upon the teachers being willing to give up that teaching time. And if it's done on a classroom-by-classroom basis, as opposed to a general assembly, we can't do it.
At a minimum, can I suggest that maybe staff could draft a very small little notice so that those of us who want to can use it in our newsletters?
I think we'll do that. That's a good point.
But it's got to be succinct.
Prom season.
Right, it's got to be succinct.
Big thing with
prom. And maybe we won't even do an e-news on this.
Yeah, actually, what month is going on?
Pre-May.
May.
Coming up, so it's a good opportunity.
Oh, that's an e-newsletter right there, absolutely.
Exactly.
The pre-prom tan.
Yeah, the pre-prom tan. I think you see a big spike in their business.
And I think we do want to maybe pass a resolution to send up to the state legislature about raising the age to 18. But other than that, I'm not sure there's much more room for us.
Doesn't look like there is
to do anything.
Well, it just goes back to the enforcement issue, but the box in the enforcement.
The difficulties of enforcement and the state kind of.
Right, we don't have 3551, so it doesn't even look like you can control these anymore.
Yes, sorry, we do have a draft that our committee council has drafted. Which is. The last two pages, which cites to the American Academy of Dermatology Association's testimony.
Would you like to be the sponsor of the resolution?
We should invite down the current chief of staff to the county executive who had several issues when we debated this 5 years ago. He wasn't quite he wasn't convinced at the time, but at least...
Well, this resolution calls for the enactment of the 18...
at least the evidence that was there. Maybe all the changes by that.
Does anybody have anything? So we'll look at the resolution. We'll, unless...
I think we ought to move the resolution.
Okay, who would like to move the resolution?
I'll
move it. I'll move the resolution.
Let Mr. Rogowski do it.
Okay.
I'll be glad to second it.
Legislator up. And for community services, right?
You should.
Second.
And Mr. Burton. Will
do
second.
We need any further discussion? I don't think so. Not on this. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
And looking at getting an e-newsletter out and information that we can promulgate out there to warn people of these dangers, but. Unfortunately, I think we just leave our law where it is until the state does something else.
Can we get this on for tonight?
I don't know if we can get it on that quickly, but we can get it off on May 3rd.
That would be
only another week.
That's in time.
Yeah, May 10th. And so at the outset, roughly, of the month, we will put this on and
get some publicity for it.
That's in time.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to say that Dr. Newberger was very helpful 5 years
ago.
Yeah, and really,
thank you for coming
really
today and bringing us up to date on the status of the science.
I apologize for my tardiness.
It's okay.
You just mentioned two studies. One that was just published in The Lancet shows...
That's the British AMA
journal. It's the, one of the British best journals. They have the risk of melanoma is increased 75% when someone uses a TENN before HPV. And in Sweden, TENN exposures dramatically increase the risk of melanoma to 5 times.
This machine is supposed to be
Thank you. Thanks. Thank you very much, Doctor. Brendan, do you want to add anything? Or
no. Just one thing. The state regulations do ask the tanning facilities to actually record the date, duration, exposure of time, and the device used. So I don't know if any way that can help out in terms of like limiting the actual use of that miner. If we can, you know, track that somehow and limit, you know, having the computer that if they're in five visits in 1 month that they're cut off or something like that.
Interesting.
That's what I was saying. You can control it, but how do you can pass a law that says it's illegal for somebody to have more than a certain amount, but
you go to the next door, next town over.
Yeah,
you would have to have
the big computer in the sky.
Computerized record, countywide, wouldn't you, in order to make that work?
You have to have an electronic database.
Tanning operation hop from one to the other.
That's something to think about for future.
Just Dr. Newberger is here. The idea of the spray on.
That's really an intrusion.
Tanning. I understand. One is there's no medical problems with the spraying, and so those
and the lotions.
Especially those young people. There's a way if you know those who want to tan. Part of the message that there are alternatives. And I don't know how often that comes up in the discussions, but you know you can go to the salon even and just get the spray on. So that message, some kids just want that tan, but there are ways of getting it that are safe,
right?
And that should be, you know, so it's that should be part of the publicity. You can get an artificial tan. You do it those who want it. Spray your lawn green. You spray yourself there.
Oh, God.
Okay, we're going to move on to another topic. If we can, Doctor, thank you again very much for coming and sharing with us your expertise.
That's
your opinion. Thank you, Doctor.
What are we doing?
Okay, we're going to move on. We have a few more. We might not cover them all today. I know that I'm going to accommodate Legislator Harkin. I may not go intrude into his time at 3 o'clock.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We're going to switch now and give, just skip the alcohol beverage warning sign so we can give Brendan a rest and let Bryn have a chance to have the floor. And we'll do two. One should be pretty straightforward. Bryn Fuller is a second-year student at Pace Law School. She's not graduating yet. And she's done some fine work here on a number of laws. We're going to do Chapter 565, Sale of Gasoline on Odd Even Days, which is kind of a... leftover, and then the 658, which is more interesting, gasoline price side. So we're going to spend a little time on gasoline. Bryn, floor is yours.
So in response to the oil embargo crisis, there was an executive order passed by the president that dealt with limiting the consumption of gasoline back in 1979. And the executive order asked all states to put some sort of restriction. So the New York State Energy Office put a restriction on the consumption of gasoline based on, even in odd days, depending on what your license plate said, you could get gas or not get gas. It was only really in use for 1 year until 1980. And then it was the executive order, the presidential order, was revoked by another presidential order in 1986. So it's completely not being used, and it was, you know, only ever effective for 1 year. So we recommend that you repeal that law in the county charter. It's pretty straightforward, but I think you have a packet of information with the actual executive order numbers and just supporting what I said, that I'm not lying about the repealing of this.
It's a very long law for such
Those are very long lines.
Remember them?
You were.
Anybody have any comments on this? Yes, sir.
I would just say to Bryn, I could offer a primary source of research because I was at the Energy Department in 1979 when we did this. So I was there and part of the gang that worked on that. So so yes, you're right. It did happen in 1979.
Yeah.
Well, do we need to repeal the whole law? I mean, there's something here. For example, posting of hours of operation and stuff like that. I guess we don't care about those types of things, right?
With those, there's two. Time looking at the right one. There's two. Yeah. There's two that go with the. This is specifically on the.
This is the odd even.
On there's two.
Chapter 5, season 5.
Right.
Let me show you the one.
The odd even one also talks about some, posting flags and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think all of that is.
The whole thing we don't need, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's regulations on how much gasoline they can sell on the New York State Thruway, which, that we don't want that anymore. We don't want.
Did the governor ever lift the emergency?
What?
Did the governor ever lift the emergency? or is it still in effect?
Oh, no, the governor, there's nothing in New York State revoking it.
Right.
So
the federal.
So technically speaking, the law is still in effect?
In New York State, yes. But the federal law that asked the state to make this.
No,
law,
but this is effective upon the proclamation of a gasoline fuel emergency by the governor. And shall remain in effect coextensively with such proclamation.
Right. The proclamation is still in effect. It has not been revoked, as far as I can tell.
So technically speaking, all these guys are illegal.
The federal request to do this.
No, but Tom's point is that the governor, in fact, issued the proclamation.
Right.
If so, we can't repeal it, is what you just read.
Well, no, we can't.
That's an interesting question.
No, he proclaimed a fuel emergency, but that didn't require us to pass the law.
But didn't you say coterminous and run?
That's what it says. It says coextensively with such proclamation and any laws and regulations promulgated thereunder.
Yeah, we're pinned.
No, we can revoke it. It because that's our law. 565.111 says that it will remain effect as long as
I think more importantly,
we can repeal our
this
law.
This is still in effect, so people who are selling gasoline to.
We're all violating the law.
We're all violating the law.
We're violating it by buying it.
Well, right.
Could we collect enough in fines?
Right.
I think we could.
Retroactively.
We could plug
that in.
We could have our child care
scholarships.
Call George Orwell. We got to find a solution.
Mr. Chair, just a. Point of order or a legal question, what would be needed from this committee in order to recommend revoking this law? But we would have to draft something.
Well, yes. Yeah, we'd have to write a
piece of
legislation.
It's very simple.
Chapter
565 of
the
laws of law is hereby repealed. Yeah. Effective immediately.
Yeah, we can put that out and just leave a bunch of blanks because it seems like we're going to be going on this for a while.
Well, I would move that we ask the county attorney to draft that.
Okay.
Local law number 11.
A big pad in triplicate with a blank next to the name.
Okay. Well, that
local
one.
Law number 11 of the laws of 1979, now known as Chapter 565, is hereby repealed.
You have the law. You have the site, right?
Okay. That's it.
Thanks. All right. Do I have a motion to repeal?
Pete moved. All seconds.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Then we'll move on to a little more complicated one. 6658. Gasoline price sales.
So, county law was passed in 1974 mandating standardization of price signage. So, it indicated that, signs need to be of a certain size and posted so that consumers could see the pricing of gasoline. But in 1986, New York State passed a law with essentially the exact same text of our county law. So, although the county law it's not mandated to be preempted, so the only law that's being enforced right now and being tracked is the state law, so it's sort of useless. It calls into question the necessity for the county law.
And we're going to ask Commissioner, you all know John Gaccione, Commissioner of the Consumer Affairs,
right.
Also the sealer. You're still the sealer.
The sealer.
The sealer. And so he can tell us about what law he enforces and how we enforce it.
We do abide by the state regulations. Some years back, and it was actually the time when I started with the department in the mid-80s, you may remember seeing where they had the breakdown of prices and then included the breakdown of taxes, state tax, local tax, federal tax.
there was a push at the state level, and that's what initiated the state legislation to get uniformity statewide. Because prices were changing so quickly, the tax amounts on those signs would change too, because some of them are based on percentage, some of them are based on a strict dollar or cents amount. So the consensus was when the state law, the consensus in the weights and measures community was when the state law was enacted, all the retailers said this is fine, and we were going to abide by what it said in the state law, which was the same as what it was in the town.
We also looked at, and Bryn also looked at, the constitutionality of this, and it's passed constitutional muster back in 1940. The signs in not this law, but
the Arlen case,
the idea of restricting speech by requiring signs and dictating their size.
Can I ask the same question I did before?
Go ahead.
Do we get the penalty for your enforcing the law?
Yes, goes to our department, to the county.
So it doesn't.
Treasury, yes.
So there's no benefit to enforcing our law. Then there's no differences between them, basically?
No, there
are no differences.
And are there many violations of this?
No, very few. It's standard practice, as I think I mentioned in the memorandum to you. We received a series of complaints when prices were changing rapidly 2 years ago. I think it's almost going on 3 years. It's certainly a point of emphasis for us. We never want to see a driver pull into a station who can't see a sign from the side of the street. That's the intent of this law. Why the numbers have to be a certain height, a certain width, and a certain background. But no, stations very quickly. And on occasion, we've not allowed a station to open until we got his signs correct, so it could be seen on the property.
To a certain extent, the signs are also regulated by municipal zoning laws, too, right? The state law would preempt the municipal zoning laws.
Well, in my experience, the local municipalities were concerned about the street signs, the sandwich board signs, zoning regulations for the the higher signs. You see digital signs now in some stations. So the state law doesn't address that. It addresses this is for the pump sign, the sign on top of the pump.
Right, got it. Okay. Legislative work.
I was just going to ask about that because I have a couple of gas stations that you and I have discussed in the past that are not now showing the large signs, but the pump signs are there.
Pump signs are required, and they have to agree with what the price per gallon is on the pump itself. Mm-hmm. And then if they do put a street sign out there, then we want all three to be the same.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Wait a minute, this prohibits it, doesn't it?
Prohibits what?
Our law says that no sign or placard stating referring.
What section are you looking at?
658.21.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out what this means. Shall be posted or maintained at or near the premises. So you can't have another sign? You can only have a pump sign? Am I reading that wrong? No sign or placard stating or referring directly or indirectly to the price other than the signs or placards here and before provided shall be posted or maintained. And what was required before? Pump signs?
Pump signs or any other dispensing mechanism had to have a sign.
Right. So that means you cannot have a sign advertising the price? That seems to be backwards. That seems to be opposite what we were.
And I think that if you look at gas stations,
everybody has them, and I thought they were mandated.
Well, I tell you, on Post Road in White Plains, there's a, I'm going to say it's a BP station, very attractive sign that is on the perimeter of the property, which is digitally displays in lighted form the pricing of the product. And it's an attractive sign, but it doesn't comply with Section 658.21.
That's what it sounds like. Yeah. But this seems to be counterproductive. I mean, you want other signs.
658.21 conflicts with local can conflict with local zoning laws, too. Which many municipalities have their own sign laws that are in local zoning laws.
So let's quietly repeal this one.
I mean, I don't think this.
No, I think this is bad to prohibit other signs.
I tell you, the digital sign is a real convenience. It really is, because you can pick it up at a distance from the station.
Right, you want to see what the price is. You're driving down the street. You don't have to drive in and drive out again. As I've done several times.
6521 enforced? I mean, is anybody.
No, we look at the state law.
Yeah.
The state law says no other sign either?
No. We look at the state law when we have a problem.
They're enforcing the state law.
Right, we enforce the state law.
And the state law does not prohibit other signs?
No, but it has the same restrictions on the pump signs.
It sets a minimum standard.
It's silent as any other signs.
Yeah.
So our law wasn't silent. Our law specifically says that it's not prohibited.
Which is odd.
Weird, yeah. That's why I'm wondering if we're reading this right.
You are.
Yeah. Provided shall be posted or maintained.
Well, you're recommending repeal of the whole section, right?
Yeah.
Of the whole chapter.
Yes.
Is 658.31 in the state law? The fraudulent provision? Fraudulent practices? I haven't had a chance to read the state law.
Well, your question, what's the enforcement mechanism of the state law that we're following?
How do you enforce the state law?
Any person shall violate the provision.
We would cite them as a violation of agriculture market law. Would be handled administratively in our office.
I see. So you don't use the sections in this law to cite them.
Is there anywhere else in the law that talks about fraudulent practices?
We could cite a station if they had prices at the street different than on the pump as an unconscionable or deceptive trade practice. It would be a deceptive trade practice to bring somebody into that station at a low ball price. And when they open up their fill hole, put the nozzle in, it's 10 or 15 cents more.
Bait and switch.
It's a deceptive practice.
Well, I'm just dealing with 658.31, which I don't see in the state law. It's probably somewhere else in the state law.
Deceptive practices.
Well, we would cite it under deceptive practices of another section of the consumer code. It wouldn't be specific.
Are we sure that that applies?
Yeah, we've done it.
Well, the very last subdivision, 6C, says willful failure to comply with provisions of this subdivision self-subjected dealer to civil penalty. So it imposes a civil penalty.
Right, but that's different than that's different than it's unlawful and for any person to sell or offer gasoline or diesel motor in a manner so as to deceive or tend to deceive. This is really this is like it says a fraudulent practice provision as opposed to
the first section. No or no.
Yeah, I mean, it's odd because this statute seemed to be put into effect or enacted for purposes of signage and notifying
$25
people.
For the first offense?
Yet it's actually, well, that's ours, but the state's are different.
The state's also $25, isn't it? I think it's the same thing.
It is?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's $25 to $500. They have a broader range than we do. Ours goes 25 and 50. Theirs is 25 to 500, if I'm quickly reading this correct. Mr. Chairman, I personally would have no objection to repealing this. I just want to make sure that this fraudulent practice clause is somewhere else, if we can have...
And Commissioner, we have sufficient...
Yeah, we have under 863.11, which is part of the Consumer Protection Code, deceptive trade practices. Any falsely disparaging or misleading oral or written statement, visual description, or other representation of any kind made in connection with the sale, lease, rental, loan, connection, offering for sale, lease, to the consumer goods. Deceptive practices are limited to, but not.
Does consumer goods fit, does it include gasoline?
If it collects sales tax on it, it's a consumer good.
Okay. Well, I'm just asking.
Yeah, that's a good question.
You know, make sure it's fit in. If it's fit in, then...
Yeah. Okay, so what's the pleasure of the committee?
So moved.
that we have to instruct the attorney's office to prepare the repealer.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor for legislation?
Aye.
All in favor for continuing services?
Aye.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman, can I just ask that when this is prepared, that the committee report be clear that in an effort to simplify and clarify the laws of Westchester County, we've identified duplicate laws of the state of New York. Because I don't want to see anybody later say that we voted against great consumer legislation by repealing things.
Yeah. Okay, so the committee reports indicate the purpose of the repeal is that state law has been enacted, which in this case doesn't preempt but supersedes our local law. And in fact, our consumer affairs department has been enforcing the state law. And the county law no longer seems necessary or needed.
Right.
Okay. Just
the unloaded,
right?
Just the unloaded. Get the letter out, right?
Great. Okay, the canning resolution will be on for tonight.
Okay.
So, okay, we're going to come back to Brendan. We're ahead of schedule, Mr. Legislator Harcum. So we're going to...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We'll rectify that.
Unless one of these last two issues.
Speak for yourself.
The next one is we'll come back to Brendan for the alcoholic beverage, another sign law.
Local law 697, alcohol beverage warning signs, was in a response to... the birth defects of the fetal alcohol syndrome. So the local law asks for warning signs, basically warning women of the dangers of drinking while pregnant and possible birth defects that could cause it.
And this was enacted in 1990
by
us?
Yes, in 1990. And then, again, a year later, the state enacted virtually the same law, the same signing requirements. Really, the only difference between the two I believe was the Westchester local law provides for non-English speaking signs for patrons that are for the whoever visits the patrons if they're not predominantly English speaking. The state doesn't have that. But besides that, the boldface type, the
That's
actual wording of the law are virtually the same.
Can we amend our law to say that the state law shall be complied with in both languages rather than having a duplicate law? Or do we lose our status as a... well, are we preempted? I mean, are we a pre-existing law, that's why we're there, or can we...
Well, no, actually, the state law actually says that any local law or that was enacted before this is deemed in compliance with the state law. So it's okay as long as... Any law that was enacted before 91 is okay.
Yeah, but if we amend our law, do we lose that status?
We might.
That's the question.
That's why. I guess the big issue is we don't want to. We may probably don't want to take away the signage requirement for other than English language. Unless
it's the state signs that I see though in the bars, right? Those are they're the state mandated signs.
And sales and. Convenience stores and stuff like that.
Who enforces this for us?
Is that yours too? You guys enforce? Oh, it's right. Nobody enforces this.
No. The SLA.
Well, Commissioner Guido, State Liquor Authority.
SLA.
Yeah, the State Liquor Authority.
Yeah.
No, but our signs are County Health Department. It says right here.
Right.
But it's been superseded.
Right, so we don't. So health doesn't go around.
Now, Dr. Archibald, before she left, sent us an email saying alcohol sales to minors and alcohol licenses signage. And record requirements are enforced by the police, the district attorney, and the New York State Liquor Authority. Now, I don't know of any, maybe I could be corrected, but the police departments I know in my district, I do not believe enforce signage laws. They enforce age, sales to minors, not signage.
Yeah. It strikes me that this law could be repealed to no loss.
I'm not sure it's doing any good. It's not being enforced.
Well, but it doesn't have anything to enforce. That's not being enforced by SLA already.
Right.
Well, the one question I have, though, is because ours requires Spanish language, are we going to be losing the impact? Because the state doesn't require that, are we going to be losing that outreach in those communities?
If we don't do it anyway, already we'd have to start going in and enforcing that.
Let me just point out, Bryn, maybe you want to
answer
this.
Maybe we should be doing it, though.
Look at 697.403. It's an odd provision because it says, in the event that a substantial number of the public patronizing a premise is described in this section, uses a language other than English as a primary language, any sign or notice required to be posted shall be worded in English in the primary language. Who's going around to check whether these bars have...
That's the whole point.
That's why...
What's the substantial number?
Yeah.
Well, because we have failed to enforce our own law. We have, by default, gone with the SLA sign. Right. The SLA sign doesn't have this. Therefore, we have a law that by even the loosest of of the things that you've said for the last 2 years is absurd. You've always said there's no point in passing a law if you can't enforce it.
Well, but to enforce this, you'd have to go out and...
Right,
but this is basically giving the health department the right to go out and determine that you need a sign in Chinese because this is a Chinese...
But think of what they have to do in order to determine it. They've got to start going to these places and seeing who patronizes them and take a census of their...
It's usually pretty obvious. I mean, you look around the room. If everybody's speaking Spanish, then...
No. Define the threshold of it. Because you walk into the room and all you hear is Spanish, or you think that all you're hearing is...
may not be their primary language.
Try to define whether or not there's a threshold for that being a Spanish bar. I think you're out of your mind to try to do something like that. And therefore...
No, it says a substantial number uses a language other than...
Define substantial.
As a primary language.
Right, but that gives the health department the total... Yeah.
You go into an Irish bar.
697.
Right.
That's
a different... Sounds like a joke coming.
697.001 legislative findings deals with women who are pregnant. The following section talks about birth defects. It's clear who within the population we're talking about. Now all of a sudden you have this general thing that John points out, 697.003, the substantial number of the public. Now all of a sudden, what are we now concerned with the public?
So you've got to interview the pregnant women.
It's terrible.
Of the pregnant women.
Of pregnant women.
I don't know. I don't think this... See, this is an example. Maybe the intention is good, but to actually enforce it and implement it is undoable.
Well, can I suggest that we have a little further discussion on this one and then maybe end up in that position? But
what's to discuss?
I'm just a little concerned about...
You don't want us to be criticized, which I think is a fair point.
Yeah.
But why don't we put that into the committee report, that while we recognize this, we find the
No, but failure to enforce is not a reason.
Well, to your point, though, the state is charged with enforcing this.
Yeah.
But enforcing,
well, doesn't have that.
Enforcing theirs.
Yeah, that's right. We don't even enforce it.
Right. I know. We don't. The state has a law. They're charged with enforcing it.
We have a law. By definition, aren't we charged with enforcing our law? We choose not to enforce our law. Where are we?
But we are letting the state law supersede us.
In which case, why have it the first place?
Exactly.
So let's just get rid of it.
Exactly.
Okay. And we put into the committee report that we recognize that whatever language that Tom would feel comfortable with.
Well, how about if we were to write a letter to the state asking them to add a provision to their law that requires bilingual signs where appropriate?
Tom, we can't even get out from under certain ridiculous...
No, say we'll repeal ours and send that letter.
I don't have a problem with doing that.
I would agree.
I don't have a problem with that at all.
I mean, whoever of us want to sign it, we'll sign it. That shouldn't stop us from...
I'd certainly sign it, but I don't know that that's going to be the basis for not doing anything here.
No, I'm just asking it.
It's a pretty minor amendment. I mean, maybe somebody would do this, just take it up and do it. It's a minor amendment to the state law.
Right.
Except the liquor industry would come on you with a ton of bricks.
Maybe, yeah.
I mean,
all right, do we have a motion? Any further discussion?
I'd move to repeal.
Send the letter down to the spot.
Oh, he's on today.
In
he's
the
on
today.
No, you're hot today.
We'll give it to Judy.
Yeah, give it to me. He's my constituent.
Right.
Just drop it off. He's right by the
house. Is there a second?
Yeah.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And the committee report, again, ought to be clear.
Community services.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you.
The committee report
will
be clear about the.
I did.
About the reason for this is the fact we're not enforcing it. The state is not enforcing it, and they're the ones enforcing the alcohol sign laws and the difficulty of even trying to enforce it. So.
Well, could we phrase it in? Let me see if this is correct.
No.
Is it correct that we don't go into these establishments for any purpose?
We do. We are in many alcohol beverage communities, but not all. So we're in bars, basically.
The ones that serve food? It's because if they serve food.
Yes.
Okay, so this applies in other locations as well.
Right.
So then perhaps we can phrase it that the health authorities from the county are not usually in all of the establishments where it would be appropriate to enforce the law.
Right, in all places where alcohol is served, the health department is not. Whereas
right.
The state liquor authority is
right. Okay.
Responsible for.
Because if you're in all of these locations otherwise, then there's no excuse for not enforcing the law. But if we have to send you into all of these places just for this purpose, it's probably not economical.
Okay, back to who we have now. Back to Bryn for this herbal cigarette.
Yeah,
which is a more complex.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Let's
hear this one.
Well, actually, the herbal cigarette law that was passed in 2000 by the county, restricting the sale of herbal cigarettes to minors, it also deals with signage and posting of the law. It is less comprehensive than the state law, which was passed in 2003. And
less comprehensive?
Yes. So everything that is restricted in the county law is also restricted by the state law. And the state law...
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. And the state law also goes on to impose stricter penalties to a retailer who sells to someone if they violate this.
I may withdraw my objections.
Keep going.
The only difference is in the sign posting. The state law requires the sign to be at least 1/2 inch in height, and the Westchester County law requires 1 inch in height.
That's
the font size. The 72-point font is 1 inch. I looked it up. So
I was wondering what it was.
Yeah, because I just thought that
actually,
you
it's not
need
true
a
true
reason. So, anyways, so we recommend that, and also based on speaking with the health department and consumer protection, it's the state law that is enforced. So, again, we recommend that the herbal cigarette law in the county is repealed.
Maybe the commissioners who are here could tell us about that. Well, I know you have you've given us emails, but Commissioner Gaccione, this is not your bailiwick, right? This is the health. So, Commissioner Guido, can you tell us about what you do?
We do enforce and we do look for it. But I can't think of one case where we found.
Do you enforce the state or the federal, or the state or the county?
Well, we did enforce the county, so the state law was enacted, and now we enforce the state.
Right. Okay. Yes, Commissioner, Legislator Hark.
Oh, no.
I thought you raised your hand.
No, I just want to give you a demonstration.
To Mr.
Okay,
Geist,
and then Legislator Abinanti actually
the reason we did this was, yes,
cigarettes.
I've had these in my office for quite some time. It was a, since like since 2000.
That's right. Ride out or what?
Huh? Used to have 50 of each.
No,
that's right. Now we know why it can explain his behavior over the years.
That's right. I remember at the time this was a whole big issue. The tobacco industry and the tobacco stores were against this law. And they said, well, you know, herbal cigarettes are popular among all kinds of smokers, not just kids. So I went out and bought some, and I said, you could picture a construction worker. This is Camel's. This is not an herbal cigarette. Mm-hmm. I said, this is what you usually see under the, you know, rolled in the sleeve of a construction worker. I said, just picture a construction worker with one of these rolled up under his sleeve. And tell me that you really believe that these guys were smoking this stuff. And apparently, this... if you smell it, you can still smell it. It smells cherry. And so it was popular among kids. Yeah, exactly. What adult is going to smoke this? This also, apparently, I don't recall the name of the game, but there was some game that kids used to play.
How come it's open?
Because I was demonstrating to people what it was.
Oh.
It looks just like a regular cigarette.
Uh-huh.
You can't, you know, you can't, so a kid who wants to, you know, be a tough kid, you know, could smoke this stuff and it looks just like a regular cigarette. Now, they're all in here. I don't think any of them been smoked. At any rate, so there was a game that kids played, maybe still do, that has this design on it. So any young parents around who might recognize the game? I don't remember what the game was.
There was a game. What was that? Dungeons and Dragons.
That may be it. But so tell me that you're making this for adults and not for kids.
Yeah, there was a whole thing about magic.
And then the numbers showed that that the younger the kids started smoking, the more likely they were to remain smokers and become real-time smokers. Mm-hmm. And so this was a way for the tobacco industry to introduce kids to smoking.
Feeders.
Exactly. So that's why we passed it. It was passed in the state immediately thereafter, because I seem to remember a certain state Senate campaign in the year 2000, and in which I was involved, and this was an issue. And then just about the same time, the New York State Senate started to introduce the legislation. It took them to 2003 to pass it. Was that when it passed?
Yeah.
It was the Fasillo bill, I think, and the big sponsor was a guy named Nick Spano, if I'm not mistaken.
You know, I mean, this illustrates something that I think is important. It is good that we are ahead of the game at times.
Right.
And when the state catches up, the question is it, you know, we then should just enforce the state law.
As much as I'd hate to see my law.
No, but look, you had an effect on the state.
Oh, yes, state law. We did that on several things.
Yeah.
We did
it
that on several.
It happened with the text law. It happened with the cell phone law. Yeah. So it's not that it's bad that we're repealing these laws. It's that the state finally saw the light and followed our lead.
I thought there was a difference, but you're saying their law was stricter?
Yeah, no, there's stricter in terms of penalties. And then the only difference I said was the size of the sign.
The signage is not the big deal, no.
So
do I have a motion on?
I will move it.
So there are signs, these herbal signs, right? But I don't know if I don't look at them.
Well, there's a state law, they're required.
Well, it's going to be a tobacco shop.
Sale of cigarettes, cigars, chewing tobacco.
Oh, so we just added to that saying. Okay. It's not a sign just for herbal cigarettes, it's part of the overall.
They added it to the.
Gotcha.
Right.
Second.
But there was a whole big thing over this way back then.
Well, here was the thing about candy, too. Candy.
All in favor for legislation?
Aye.
Aye.
All in favor for community service?
Aye.
Thank you.
I just want to, I think we're done for the day, but I just want to publicly thank Brendan and Bryn for the work they did. This was an extensive project, and we're trying to now use this.
Wait, what happened to my 702 or whatever?
Can I finish?
No, we're not doing your 702.
We'd like to, we're going back to the deans at Pace to try to get credit for people to do this in the future. We couldn't get them credit for this, and they did this pro bono.
Well, cool.
So I would like all of us to
Great job.
So we're fighting for that. We're going back.
Should we have a resolution officially condemning the dean of Pace for failure?
A resolution. I think they'd like to prepare a resolution commending them.
The state just superseded that applause.
and we'll have some other interns coming in to present on laws they analyze.
I was going
to
say, do you have more of this coming?
Yes, but we want the deans to see that we're going to send a work product and say, look, this is a substantive work. Look at the work product. These.
Yeah, but then they say you should pay. You don't have any money.
Anyway, thanks a lot. Thanks for coming. Do you have a motion to adjourn legislation?
So moved.
Second.
Adjourn community services.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Mr. Chair, I would like to compliment you for how you expedited this meeting today.
So you can start.
And you managed.
And these guys not only are passing laws,
variety of subjects,
they're passing laws that repeal other laws.
Hey, that's a twofer. Right?
That's right.
All right, 3 o'clock environment.
Thank you. Hey, I'll get to do this on the floor of the legislature with my little routine.
I'll make a good visual.
But that's why I had them sitting on that. Jesus, they've been sitting up there 10 years.
Hi.
Oh, did we do minutes? That's it. There's a typo. It's not the Greenberg tax receiver. G-R-E-E-B. It's G.